This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah wa salatu wa salamu ala nabiyyina Muhammad wa ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wahdahu la sharika la wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluhu amma ba'd. I'd like to welcome you, inshallah, to this. It's going to be a very quick review of some of the recommendations of the 18th Annual Imams Conference for AMJA, the Assembly of Muslim Jurists in America. And inshallah, the portion that I'm going to cover is just the portion that is related to financially related technology that was covered in the most recent conference for AMJA, inshallah. The goal, inshallah, is to make it a quick review. So hopefully, inshallah, it'll be quick but easy to understand. So one of the first, so I'll just go in order of the different topics that they touched upon and give you a quick summary of their conclusion. So the first one is borrowing on interest for the sake of charity. And essentially, if you want to give money for charity, and let's say like you use your credit card, and if you're not going to be able to pay your credit card off in the proper time, then there's going to be an interest charge. So if you know or you don't expect that you might be able to pay it off, then you don't get involved in interest just to do a charitable act. And secondly, they also talked about borrowing on interest in order to pay the obligatory zakat. So it should be clear, you cannot use interest or get involved in interest to pay for charity. But that's also the same with respect to the obligatory zakat. You don't get involved in a great haram like interest to pay off your zakat. So if you are thinking of using your credit card and then you're going to pay it over time to pay your zakat, this is incorrect. Even if you have to delay the payment of the zakat, this is going to be more proper and more acceptable than getting involved in interest to pay your zakat. With respect to issues like designing business websites, so if you are working in that field in IT and so forth, so as long as the website that you've designed, number one, if it's not involved in haram products, and there's nothing haram about what you've set up about and what you're using to set it up, then inshallah it is permissible. If, however, the people then who are running that website after you leave, after you design it, if they get involved in something haram, they, you know, let's say like they add new products which are haram, then that is their responsibility. That is no longer your responsibility. A lot of times on websites, in order to promote products, especially if you are trying to promote a product that's, let's say like produced by a non-Muslim company, they're probably going to have advertisements and things like this, which are going to have women in them, and those women, of course, are not going to be dressed appropriately. So the default, obviously, is that you are not supposed to have any of those kinds of pictures on your website, even to promote a product. However, what AMJA has said here, they said if one is forced to use such pictures, they should efface or blur out the portions of the aura from the picture. So if you have no choice but to use something coming, let's say, from the company that shows a woman, and then you do your best to blur out those portions of the aura, the portions of the woman that should be covered. And there's some difference of opinion among the scholars. If, let's say, like you're like selling a hand cream or something like that, and so you just have a picture of a hand, or if you're selling like hair products and there's just a picture of hair, there's some difference of opinion whether or not that is acceptable. And AMJA says here that the most apparent conclusion is it is exempted if there is a true need for it. So if there isn't any need for that, then you avoid it. If somehow there is some kind of true need for it, then you can do it, inshallah. With respect to sales over the internet, so a lot of the same principles of any basic sale. If I'm going to sell something to you and you buy something from me, so there are some basic principles. The thing that I'm selling, it must be halal. I must be the owner of it at the time of the contract. Our identities need to be known, and of course, especially when it comes to the internet, you want to be careful that you know the personality that you're dealing with, and it is actually that person, not that somebody has like hacked into their account. As we know, there's a lot of fraud and identity theft on the internet, so you want to avoid that. When it comes to business contracts, you have an offer and acceptance. So that offer and acceptance should be, the offer should be given. The acceptance should come right after each other, after that. It should be in one setting. But now when you move to the internet, you have a little bit different possibilities. Number one, if you can conclude such a contract by verbal communication or both verbal and visual communication over the internet, then that should be fine. Similarly, auction places like eBay, those sales will have the same ruling as the two parties being present with one another. Similarly, other kinds of contracts of like getting a loan or being a guarantor or an agency, they also say that that's going to have the same ruling as the two parties being present with one another. Again, as long as there is this contact communication, clear communication between the two parties. And as we said, everything has to be done in one session. I mean, I cannot, let's see, like offer you my car for $1,000. And then 1 year later, when the price of the car maybe has gone up, you say, okay, I'll take it for $1,000. So you have to have the offer, and the acceptance needs to basically follow immediately. So the next topic that they discuss is buying and selling over the internet or auction sites, and as I said, basically the same conditions apply to any similar kind of sale. And one of those conditions is that the item that, for example, if I'm selling it to you, that item must be under my possession and must be my property. Now there is a type of sale. There is a type of sale which is an exception to this, and this is what is known as a selim or a forward sale, where basically you're going to pay me now and I'm going to deliver later. But this kind of contract is only acceptable if the item that we are talking about is what is known as a fungible. It is not a unique item. It is something that actually is being mass reproduced, for example, and it's going to be easily available. I'm going to be able to obtain it. Let's say like I'm going to give you so many iPhones. You're buying so many iPhones for me. Delivery is going to be after 3 months. We give the exact specs of the iPhone and you pay me now and I deliver it to you later. This is what is known as a selim. And this is permissible as long as that is a fungible item. It is clearly described. And it is well known that it should be easily available at the time of delivery, and this is useful for internet sites, because then you can sell things which you don't necessarily possess right now, but you are able to get it in a short period of time or whatever time you agree on to deliver to the buyer. And so, as they mentioned here, the sound ways and means of buying merchandise via the internet are the following. Number one is the customary fashion, where I own something and you buy it from me directly. So it's in my possession. It's in my possession and I am the owner. And then I sell it to you. Number two, you could opt for, again, a selim sale or forward sale, where you're delivering the money to me now. And then I'm delivering the goods to you at a specific time, which we have agreed upon. Or there's also a brokerage sale, or like a middleman sale, where I'm basically arranging the sale between you and two parties and working out the contract and so forth, and assisting in the contract. And I'm going to get a fee for my services. Or there's also an agent sale, where basically I'm just selling on behalf of somebody else. And whatever I sell, I get like a percentage or some stipulated payment of what I'm selling. All of those are permissible and workable via the internet as well. However, there are some special cases, let's say like dealing in gold or silver. So the issue with gold and silver is that it is one of the items that if we're trading gold for silver, for example, there's a hadith that describes that it has to be a spot transaction. Has to be a spot transaction. I'm giving you the gold and you're giving me the silver. Obviously, since gold and silver are different, the amounts that we exchange don't have to be the same, but it has to be a spot transaction. So now if you're buying something over the internet, how are we going to have this spot transaction? What is considered like one meeting where this is going to take place? I'm going to give you the money, and possession and ownership is going to be transferred to me basically immediately. That's what must be done. So in other words, possession is of two types. Either I'm going to physically possess it or I'm going to legally possess it, where the ownership transfers to me immediately and it's now in my name and I can do whatever I want with it. So if that's going to be able to be done, even over the internet, that is fine. Any kind of delay where I'm going to, let's say, like pay you money now and you're going to deliver the gold later, this is not allowed, because again, this is a type of riba, and so therefore something of that nature cannot be allowed when it comes to buying gold or silver. The same applies to buying gold bullion, for example. There's nothing wrong with owning gold bullion. And as we said before, ownership is of two types. Either I actually like have it, or possession slash ownership, or ownership is of two types. Either I have it like physically in my hand, or basically I have, by law, I have control over that thing and nobody else has control over it. So when you buy gold bullion, for example, they'll specify, let's say like you're buying gold bars, they'll specify each bar that you're buying, and it's going to have a serial number and so forth. So even if it, you know, even if it doesn't, you know, even if they don't ship it to you, right, you actually like keep it in the place where you bought it from, but the ownership has changed completely to you. Now it belongs to you. Nobody else can touch it. And if you want to resell it immediately, you are able to, resell it. But again, since it's gold bullion, the important thing is you have to make sure that it is going to be a spot transaction. You're going to give them the money now, and the ownership is going to be transferred immediately. Okay? You don't have to physically take possession of it, but by law, it now has to be in your name. And so this brings up, obviously, since now we're dealing with the internet and buying gold and silver. So if you're buying gold or silver over the internet, if you are buying with a debit card, then the fatwa here says this is okay, but you cannot buy gold or silver, or also cash, like another currency. You cannot buy gold or silver or cash by using a credit card with deferred payments. So if in any way, you know, there's a deferred payment between you and the credit card company, then this is not going to be allowed. And they also add here the question of if someone, let's say like somebody wanted to invest in an ATM machine. If that ATM machine is, and they say that it's possible to do this, you get an ATM machine that doesn't deal with credit cards. Then that's going to be okay. Right? If it deals with credit cards, then basically you're assisting in ribawi or interest-based transactions. That's not going to be allowed. But if it's an ATM machine that doesn't deal with credit cards, then it is permissible. You could even put it in a mosque, for example, they say. Of course, it should be away from the place of prayer, the musalla, so you're not doing actually business inside the mosque itself. Cryptocurrency is another topic that they discussed. So first and foremost, any cryptocurrency that you're thinking of investing in, you have to make sure that it is legit. There's a lot of fraudulent cryptocurrencies out there, a lot of scams out there. So you have to make sure that it is legit. Since cryptocurrency is a type of currency, again, if you're going to buy it, you have to make sure that it is a spot transaction. And then they discuss, of course, before even getting to that, the question of is it something actually even permissible or not? And they point out that that the evidence that it is permissible is, are stronger than the evidence that it is prohibited. There's a number of scholars that brought up kind of issues with it, that it should be prohibited, and they give a whole list of like concerns that they have. But actually, those objections that they have, they could be applied even to many of the currencies around the world. So they don't really have any strong objections against against cryptocurrency. So therefore, the conclusion is that it seems to be permissible. Although AMJA is in no way, when you say it's permissible, they're not telling you, they're not encouraging you to invest in it. And they also, again, once again, warn you and tell you that you should take all precautions when it comes to getting involved in these cryptocurrencies. And when it comes to cryptocurrencies, the taking a possession of it, again, I mean, there's no such thing as the actual coin, right? So taking possession of it is when basically when your name is added to the blockchain as essentially the one who is the owner of this currency. Similarly, when it comes to mining cryptocurrency, there's two basic ways. There's now new ways also being added, but the two basic ways of what is known as proof of work, and the other one is called proof of stake. Proof of work is Bitcoin, and then proof of stake, Binance and Ethereum, they use those, for example. So this is basically where you are minting. They use the term minting, although no minting is involved. You are trying to produce new cryptocurrency coins. And essentially, the main difference between proof of work and proof of stake is that in proof of stake, you are actually putting in some investment, some money in the first place, and you get stakes. And this increases the chance of you basically being selected as the, essentially like the winner. The new coins are going to be produced by different people trying to solve a puzzle. The first one who is able to solve that puzzle is going to get rewarded by cryptocurrency. So the proof of work is safer from a Sharia perspective because there's no question of possible riba being involved. And it is like what is known as a juhala or reward contract, where basically if I say, you know, I lost my car, lost my camel, perhaps. Hopefully I don't lose my car, but I lost my camel. You know, whoever finds it, I'm going to give them $500. That kind of contract is allowed. It's called the juhala or reward contract. And proof of work cryptocurrency mining is very similar to that, and should be should be acceptable. Sometimes you can do cryptocurrency mining on your own, or you could join a pool of people. You have to be cautious though when you join a pool of people if you are, especially if you're putting funds up. If you are, let's say, guaranteed a specific return like a payment, this will not be acceptable because it will be ribawi. Essentially, whenever you enter into a financial partnership, you know, your return cannot be fixed. It has to be based on wins and losses, profits and losses. And so you have to avoid being assigned a fixed return. Another big thing nowadays, of course, is smart contracts. You have to make sure that any times you're dealing with smart contracts that they don't involve anything haram, which is going to be difficult, you know, in the way that it's being used in the different platforms. So they need to be inspected very closely if you are, let's say, investing in one of those platforms and so forth, what kind of contracts that they are actually getting into. Finally, they discussed non-fungible tokens or NFTs. And here they say this requires some detail. The default ruling concerning things is that of permissibility. So if the NFT is representing something that is permissible, then it's okay. If it, especially if it has like real meaning or value to it, some kind of usufruct. But if it is representing something that is haram, let's say like pictures of women and so forth, or doesn't have any usufruct, if it doesn't have any usufruct, then it's not really much more than like bragging rights. In which case, it might be just a waste of money, and we've been prohibited from wasting money. So that is As I said, very quickly, a review of all the different topics that Amjad covered related to financial issues in the most recent 18th annual conference of the Amjad. I pray, inshallah, that this was beneficial and hopeful, helpful to you, inshallah. And inshallah, hopefully, inshallah, we'll see you at the next Amjad conference. Wa barakallahu fikum. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك واشهد ان لا اله الا انت واستغفرك واتوب اليك والسلام عليكم ورحمه الله وبركاته